Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour 2 of Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. We talk college football, do it across the network. 9 states and 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing, folks. April in Tuscaloosa. Folks, it's kind of like the other 11 months. Football is first. For right now, a window, certainly this weekend, I wonder, are Alabama fans, like, have they taken over college basketball locales? It is, morning in Tuscaloosa as far as college hoops goes. And they have a spring game coming up. So we're going to talk football, but I can't help myself. I got to ask one hoops question. We're going to start TideIllustrated.com. It's a Rivals thing. Tony Soukalos, welcome back, friend. How have you been?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, I'm good. I have to imagine a Final Four trip is good for subscriptions. Is that right? How's the excitement level?
Man, I'm excited about covering the Final Four. It's not something you think about when you're an Alabama beat writer, right? I think you take for granted all the football championships, but you never even think about covering a basketball championship. So it's cool. Tide Illustrated's caught basketball fever. It's taken over the site. I've never covered this much. I mean, it's not like we don't cover basketball, Chuck, but I've never covered this much basketball since I've been on the beat. But it's worthy of it. They're having a hell of a run, and they're a really fun team to watch. And the deepest run in program history. Nate Oates has really turned this program around.
So I don't want to get into this. Give me like a 15-second answer. They're playing a freight train. And Bama's good. They earned their trip. But they're playing an absolute monster. Give me your quick flyover.
Alabama needs to hit 23s and get play defense when it matters. They're not going to be able to play the defense to the level to totally stop UConn. You're right. UConn's a freight train, so the shots need to be falling for Alabama, and then maybe they can pull an upset.
Fair enough. All right, let's get into football. They got about a week and a half left, and then they got a spring game. What stands out the most, like, on field as far as differences with DeBoer, if any do?
We haven't gotten to see them too much, like, on field to see the different styles and schemes and stuff. During practice, I think things are moving faster. Things seem to be there's music at practice, which is kind of different. I think you're going to see a more spread out offense and, able to utilize the attack a lot more through the air. On defense, there's going to be a lot more kind of reading the quarterback's eyes, a lot more zone coverage. I'd like to see it, we don't get to see the scrimmages or anything like that. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how much differences I can spot when A-Day comes up at the end of the month. So I think that'll be kind of interesting. But I think, off the field, there's a lot of differences. So I think there's a different kind of vibe around the team.
Specifically how?
I think they're a lot lighter. I think there's a lot less. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing from a team perspective, but I think that there's a looser mentality. I think Nick Saban ran a really tight ship, and I think people were very guarded. And I think now you've got a little bit more free flowing. I wonder how that seeps into the actual team side. I'm seeing it from a media side, but everyone's all the talk. We're all the talk to assistant coaches. We're allowed to talk to a lot more players. And so it seems like players are in a good mood. There seems to be a really positive vibe around this team where a lot of times there was a guarded or, it seems like you were going up against the enemy kind of vibe. So I wonder if that kind of maybe creates more or less tension on the team. It's tough to be Alabama, even now, I don't think they necessarily have quite the target on their back, but that will come if they start winning. And I think maybe this lighter, looser mindset might help a little bit with that.
So it would be normal. It's not muckraking anymore. A few years ago, it would be. It would be normal if after spring a quarterback transferred. And I'm talking about not to Notre Dame lacrosse, like transferred to play football somewhere. Talk Ty Simpson, because he ain't beating Jalen Milroe out. And daylight's burning as far as eligibility. So wither Ty Simpson.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a good camp, though. And you don't know what's going to happen. We really don't know how Jalen Milroe is going to fit in this system. So if you're just trying to speak from it from a Ty Simpson standpoint, I think maybe if he's hung tight this far, he had a good scrimmage. According to the sources that I spoke to, he had the best scrimmage. Now, it was kind of hard to judge. The offensive line's not where it needs to be. The pass rushing is. So there was a lot of scrambling for your life out there. But, Ty Simpson looked good, and he's a quarterback that fits this system. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Like you just said, I don't necessarily expect anyone to beat out Jalen Milroe at the moment. But if he's hung this far, he might as well kind of stay with it. We'll see what happens. There's two more scrimmages left. Let's see how things progress from there. He's definitely somebody that you would watch in that portal. He's a good quarterback. He hasn't really had too much of an opportunity at Alabama, but there's going to be teams calling for him. I would imagine, I think he's not just some, small school quarterback. I think he can really play. But he really loves Alabama. And so I don't know about that, but there's also Dylan Lonergan. He's a kid that's a really good prospect. Does he stick around? They brought in Austin Mack, who's having a really good spring, and he already knows the DeBoer system, and he's, was with them. They recruited him, and he's the same age as Dylan Lonergan, or actually he's a year younger, but he's the same classification as Dylan Lonergan. So that's, that might create some kind of, drama. And then you look at it with Jalen. If Jalen doesn't, win the job, or if Jalen gets replaced by the time the portal opens, he'll definitely probably jump in, and he'll have a million schools looking at him. But it is going to be interesting. I agree with you. The quarterback position, it's highly unlikely they go to the fall with all four of these quarterbacks.
All right, wrapping up, Tony Tsoukalos, again, TideIllustrated.com. It's a Rivals effort. All right, this is another – there's all these unrealistic things we got used to when Saban was there. I got used to, and I thought this was real for a minute, that, you're going to go from Mark Ingram to Trent Richardson to Eddie Lacy to Derrick Henry to, just bam, 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 hammer after hammer after hammer.
Right.
That's not real. What's it going to look like, the two deep or three deep, I guess, this fall?
With the running back position?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, but I would have told you this. I feel like a sunshine pumper for telling you this right now, but I would have told you this last year. I think they're going to have a more talented two this year than they did last year. Now, experience, whatever, but Justice Haynes and Jam Miller, to me, is a more talented pairing than Jace McClellan and Roydell Williams. Now, how they progress on the big stage, we'll see. But we saw a lot from Justice Haynes in the Rose Bowl. He looked good. We've seen some stuff from Jam Miller. I expect that to be good. I don't know how this offense is going to utilize the running backs. Are they gonna ride with one of them? If Justice Haynes gets hot, is he gonna be the guy, or are they gonna try to split it up? So I don't know. And when you look at some people saying Justice Haynes has the ability to be a Heisman candidate or whatever. Well, it's like if you're splitting carries, then you have Jalen Miller as a quarterback. I don't see that happening, but I think he's going to be a very productive player and a weapon. The thing about this running back room, though, is there's not a thunder lightning, complementary. They're all kind of the same guy. Justice Haynes can do the same things Jam Miller can do, and Richard Young can do that same thing, too. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how it all plays out. But I would argue there's more talent in the room than there was last year.
All right, so last thing I want to ask you about, we're not even going to talk about the defense. That'll be next time. Kobe Prentice is a guy who he's played ball, and he has been among this big collection of just elite stud recruits, and there's just there's a washtub full of them over the past two or three years in Tuscaloosa who have been fine enough, but maybe not really stood out. Is Kobe Prentice standing out right now as we speak as a spring player?
Yeah, he's a useful guy for them. The thing about him is you kind of look at what Kalen DeBoer did with the talent. You know, if you look at the talent coming out of high school and what he turned into at Washington, you know, you kind of got to be optimistic about maybe him taking a lot of these receivers to the next level. I think Kobe Prentice is a guy you could stick in the slot. I think Ryan Williams is also a guy you can stick in the slot. So between those two, I think that's that position right there. I think the real thing for Alabama is they need to find that X receiver. They've got a lot of guys that can contribute, that are fast, that can do a lot of things. I mean, Kobe Prentice is one. Ryan Williams will probably be one when he comes in. I I've heard a lot of good things about Jeremy Bernard, the Washington transfer. You know, he's a guy that can go out on one of those wide receivers. Kendrick Law is a guy that can kind of do a million things as well. It really hurts, though, that they lost Jalen Hale, because they need an X on this team. And, you know, you could sell me on the fact that they would look for a wide receiver in the portal, but only if it's a bigger X kind of guy, because they have a whole bunch of players like a Kobe Prentice that are kind of fast. And you know, you can get them on slants or you can get them for deep, but they need, you know, a bigger receiver. And it kind of hurts that they lost Jalen Hale. And we don't know the full extent of that injury, but he's out for the spring. And it just doesn't seem good. So you could sell me on a receiver. They don't necessarily need a receiver in terms of talent in the room, but you could sell me on them getting one if it's the right profile of receiver.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me 3-4 times last year they really do have plans for Jalen Hale. They really, really do like that kid. So, you're right. He was one of those guys.
He's a guy that can just go up and grab the ball. You know, I mean, they don't necessarily have a ton of guys that just go up and grab the ball. Caleb Odom might be that guy. You know, he was a tight end. I think he becomes a lot more important. Yeah. You know, he's a 6'5" kind of guy. He was recruited as a tight end, or maybe he was always recruited as a wide receiver. The plan is that he's a wide receiver now. He could certainly be that X if he can progress. You know, it's tough to get it out of a true freshman, but, you know, that could be the answer as well. I didn't mention him, but he's a guy that I think they certainly have plans for now with Jalen Hale's departure. Or not injury, sorry.
No, that's fine. I was laughing about when you mentioned Ryan Williams. I was like, oh, yeah, the 5-star guy who's about to, you know, get there in summer. So, you know, he will be involved as well. Tony, it's great insight, man. Thank you for your expertise, brother.
Yeah, anytime.
Tony Tsoukalos, TideIllustrated.com, said the subs are up. Basketball. We're all over the basketball. It's April. We got spring game in a week and a half, and we're Basketball Central at TideIllustrated.com. Heath, South Carolina, they went to the men's Final Four. Was that in Glendale as well?
It was. First time that they had one in the West since 1995 in Seattle. It is not a great spot for the Final Four.
Can I ask?
At all. No, it's a terrible spot. To do a great Final Four, you need to be in a self-contained area. It's not about the quality of the city. It's about, can you be in an area where the energy feels all around the event? That stadium being all the way out in Glendale like it is, and
there
then
it is, yeah.
Other stuff in downtown Phoenix. No, it totally kills the vibe. You'll take it anywhere you can get it, obviously. Bama fans will remember it forever. But I wish for them they had gotten a better site, a San Antonio, an Indianapolis, somewhere like that.
I covered a Super Bowl out there, and apparently I was never within, like, many miles of the actual site of the game. Like, I did everything based around the Super Bowl, but I wasn't actually there. I was wondering and also the feel inside the building. Now, we long ago sacrificed that. You may have to go back to, I'm going to guess here, if I get it wrong, I apologize, maybe Kemper Arena in the late 80s. Maybe the last time an actual Kemper Arena is it a parking lot or a Hampton Inn now? Kemper Arena in 1988 hosted the Final Four and in a actual basketball arena, you know, and seats 16,000. Well, that'll never happen again. So when you put it in, even the Superdome, I say even, it's a 50-year-old building where they can't promise you the lights will stay on. But you put it in the Superdome, you put it in wherever, the big giant thing with a roof, you can sell 60,000 tickets. So you don't really care if it is more in a deposition. Were you at the game? Yes. you were sitting like right up next to the curtain, you know, where they pull. But you were at the game. You were one of 60,000 people watching. I've been to games in like ACC tournaments in stadiums. They had the ACC tournament in the Georgia Dome back in the day. And so it's crappy. It's bad for the actual play of the game. But a long, long, long time ago, that got cast aside. You want to see a really freaky thing? It's just a weird photo. And because it was the first and you didn't know how to do it. Basketball games being played in a big, giant football game stadium setting is not an unusual thing anymore. And they figured out the best way to do it. I think it is you butt it up against one side. And then you build some temporary seats, like riser, like going up the other side, and you kind of work it in, you know, like two permanent sides and then temporary seatings all around it. Like you lead towards, though, like the end zone seating and one sideline. You sort of lead towards those. And then you sell tickets anywhere. Go Google image Houston, UCLA, Astrodome, 1968. Like they went out to second base and just threw a court down. And they said, all right, y'all play. So they hadn't figured that thing out yet, but over time we have. All right, we're going to break and continue next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Still the Chuck Oliver Show, and surprise, surprise, we're talking college football. It is what we do. I appreciate y'all coming here. We talk college football, been doing it for 2 hours a day for almost 10 years, and so that's what you know you're going to get every day. So I appreciate whether it's live, whether it's on the app, whether it's on your digital device, whatever it is, thank you for coming. On the Duncan Newsmaker line, hour one, our truest reporter for Mississippi State from the Jackson Clarion Ledger. We heard from Stephen Kreischnick earlier in the program. Just had Tony Sue Collis from TideIllustrated.com. Rivals effort. Just talked to Alabama and a little hoops to start with that. And then on to spring practice and DeBoer, et cetera. Coming up in about 10 minutes, truest reporter for Texas A&M from AggieYell.com. Mark Passwater is going to join us. They are six practices in, I believe, in College Station, and they will wrap up. They are on the 20th, I believe, at the end of the month. And so we will cover everything going on relevant there. The statement will come from Dallas. The story is what's looming in Birmingham, I believe. The statement I'm talking about is we're hiring a businessman as conference commissioner. Or more correctly, we're also hiring a businessman to run our college athletic conference. The AAC has zeroed in on new commissioner. You don't know this name. You're not supposed to. It's okay. Tim Pernetti. Right now, he's president of IMG Academy. The actual relevant description is Tim Pernetti Maka, big hitter, connected. He was athletic director at Rutgers for a little bit, but he got caught up in the wash and they needed a fall guy and they're like, it's you. So, and that was kind of generally one of the understood things is he got done wrong, but he got fired or resigned. He had to go. But other than that, you go look at his resume and it's deal maker. It's business guy. It's big hitter. It's all of those things. College conference commissioners are now business, finance, and deal making. It is not about athletics as the priority. It's not. It's about scalable models and revenue projections. And we all kind of understand that. We live in the adult world. This is not supposed to be breaking news. It's just a further example that a kind of a major athletic conference is saying, we're going to do this as well. Now, those things have always been present in the SEC. The ability, scalable models and revenue projections, and we're sharp business-wise, they've always been sharp in the SEC. And they're sharp right now in the SEC. But prioritizing those ahead of what actually is good for athletes, the quality of the games, fans, I won't even mention. Prioritizing the ability to monetize anything is the deciding factor in who runs conferences now. It's not good for the actual product. for what's being consumed, like the reason we're all here, college football. Have y'all noticed, like, did y'all hear the complaints from Major League Baseball players who know about it? Complaints from Major League Baseball players when spring training opened that Fanatics, who had taken over the new license, and they're making the uniforms now, they're in charge of making uniforms and providing to Major League players. The short version is that they're cheaper now. They're the cost to manufacture them. Fanatics found a way to spend less money, apparently, to manufacture, to actually construct these. They're doing it in a cheaper way, and you could see through them. I don't know how or if that got adjusted, but that was the initial complaint from like a lot of major leaguers. Now that the season has started, and I've watched a bunch of baseball now. And spring training, you kind of watch your team a little bit, maybe, but not a whole, but maybe not at all. Regular season starts, and now everywhere around the bigs, I'm noticing they're off, man. Like, if you will look at what are supposed to be road grays, any team taking the field in a gray uniform, dude, that's blue. It's supposed to be gray. Look at any gray, and maybe it's intentional. I don't think it is. I think that they just got the color off. But Fanatics, what is Fanatics great at? Distribution, access, price. The actual product? The reason we're all here, college football? That will be affected in a bad way. Commerce, revenue, that's going to be affected in a good way. The actual details of the Golden Goose, we'll get to those later. The most recent playoff announcement put that in black and white, folks. They went on record. And this is almost a quote. We have the finances worked out. We'll get back together later and figure out how many teams, from where they come, et cetera. The money needs to be set first, folks. And it is. And so the games and the details, those are secondary. They said that. So as big business as the SEC is, how much longer will the conference commissioner be someone in athletics as a background, as a priority? Make no mistake, very smart. Very forward-thinking, aggressive financial minds are in every cube at the SEC offices. They're not bumpkins off the turnip truck. But every other conference, they're making deal makers now.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's a Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and we're talking college football. We are somewhere between halfway through to almost done for spring practice for everybody in the SEC, basically, except for Missouri, because they've been done for 3 weeks. But everyone else, Auburn gets at it Saturday, and then the 13th and 20th, there's just a slew of games, and everybody will get wrapped up. For Texas A&M, they're like most folks. Unless you're on campus and you know, like, that the center's putting the shot again, and that's got him in touch with the new coach, maybe. You know, I don't know. Unless you're, like, there, you don't know how the offensive line two deep's going. We're all supposed to know about quarterbacks. We think we do. With Texas A&M, how's Connor Wegman progressing? I think I want to know, is he healthy? I think that's what I want to know. And then we can talk about, like, progressing and offense and all that other stuff. I know somebody with all these answers. From AggieYell.com, it's Mark Passwaters. Mark, welcome back, friend. How are you?
Hey, Chuck, how's it going?
Oh, I'm pretty good. A&M, six practices in. What have we learned about how Mike Elko runs things versus how Jimbo runs things?
Very, very different. First of all, if you're a member of the media, you're not getting as close as you did with Jimbo. You know, they've got you at a pretty good distance. Outside of that, you know, very different drills, very different approach. A lot more instruction, I think, would be the best term. I mean, they've really taken it back down to brass tacks and, you know, started to rebuild from the ground up in terms of just how you're supposed to approach things. This is how you're going to tackle. This is how you're going to block. You know, very different in that respect. And, of you know, one big thing is, you know, Elko's kind of roaming around. Jimbo was always with the quarterbacks, always with the offense, but Elko's pretty much letting the assistants handle things, but he will go around and check out everything in the course of a practice.
Okay, well, let's talk what we all think we know, which is quarterbacks, and how's Connor Wegman progressing?
Well, he's not 100% yet. You know, the ankle injury that he had was just in a very bad place, but all the same, he's out there, he's practicing, and, you know, Elko didn't hesitate when he said he's QB1. So by the start of the summer, I don't think there's going to be any issue. He's working out and all of those things. Watched him throw. Throws look good. You know, it's just a matter of getting that element of mobility back that makes him an elite quarterback. And once that happens, you know, he'll be fine.
All right, we'll bounce out to the perimeter, and there's big, tall Noah Thomas from last spring. A lot of people paid attention to him. And Moosh Muhammad's kid, who from like a couple of seasons ago people remember, worked through the two deep or three deep or the first four, whatever the like most likely targets are as they appear now.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I'm not sure exactly who's going to start yet, but I've got a pretty good idea of who will play, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
You know, obviously, Moosh Muhammad's going to be one of them. You know, he had his issues with Jimbo. I thought it was kind of amusing that he was out there wearing long sleeves first practice I saw, because that actually got him suspended for a game under Jimbo. So he's going to be a primary target. I think he's going to be the guy who replaces Anaya Smith as the lead guy. Noah Thomas is out there. He's going to be a big target as long as he stays healthy. Jade Walker, who was a transfer last year and really broke out, he's probably a starter. He looks ridiculous. I mean, he's 6'5". Just, you know, prototype receiver. Micah Tease is a freshman they had last year. They really like his speed. He's going to play. And then they have two transfers. Jabray Barber from Troy, who was 1 yard short of 1,000 last year. And then Cyrus Allen from Louisiana Tech, who's a guy I'm really interested in watching, because this is a guy who's averaged 18 yards a catch over two seasons. So that's no fluke. He's been getting deep consistently. So if he can add that to guys like Walker and Thomas, then they may have something here.
All right. I wasn't kidding. Bryce Foster, am I right? Is he shot put? Is he discus? Is he? He's a track and field guy, right? The center?
Yep. To quote Elko, yeah, he's track. He's putting the shot as he has the last three springs, and that has rubbed people, you know, fans the wrong way the whole time. But, you know, Jimbo let him do it. I get the sense that while Elko is letting him do it, he's not real thrilled with it. And certainly they're checking out a whole lot of guys to play center. And, you know, I don't know if there's any guarantee he has a job come summer.
Okay, this was interesting. And the reason I brought it up is because last year the same thing was happening, and I was like, yeah, but it's not a big deal, because when these are the guys that brought you in and coached you and recruited you, I mean, it's a pro thing. I didn't sign you. I didn't bring you in. You're not my guy. It's just a real different vibe when that's the case. All right, go to tailback, because as I'm recalling, I got surprised. You know, Moss and Owens, they both announced they were coming back for the year. I was like, one of those cats is supposed to leave. Talk about the running back depth chart.
You know, it's really interesting because Amari Daniels was actually the guy who had the most yardage.
Yeah.
But I would put him, you know, right now I'd say he's probably third string. You know, all three of those guys, though, look like they've been doing some serious work in the weight room. They look significantly bigger. I know that Owens has already put on, you know, about 10 pounds of muscle. Moss looks really good. You know, the problem with Le'Veon Moss has always been, can he stay healthy? When he was healthy last year, he put up numbers. With Owens, it's just, you know, can he get acclimated going from small town football to the SEC? You know, I think those two guys are the ones they're really hoping break out this season. But Daniels has been the guy who consistently goes out and gets you 3 or 4 or 5 yards, and then he'll pop one for 40. But I think the guys that, you know, Moss and Owens are the two that could have the higher ceiling, I guess, for lack of a better term.
All right, flip it around to the defense, because I don't know. I mean, a head coach, you're not going to hire a DC that you don't agree with, you know, in general principle. But so I know his, you know, Elko's DNA is all over it. But who's actually going to be doing the calls on Saturday? And do we make too much about that?
Well, it's going to be Jay Bateman. But, you know, it's certainly, you know, if we had a Jimbo offense last year, we got an Elko defense this year. I don't think there's much doubt about that. He's the driving force behind it. He's the guy who has, you know, been the designer. But he has faith in Bateman. These are guys that have worked together before. So, you know, I think that he'll, you know, be comfortable basically just giving him the keys and letting him go. And I'm very excited to see what this defense does, because, you know, in terms of just pure, you know, eye test, they look real impressive.
Last thing, and you know, comment on whatever level you choose on this. Are folks in Austin already, like, chest out? And I'm not trying to project anything on them, but, like, they don't have any fear coming into the conference. This isn't like when, you know, the SEC has expanded before, and Missouri, who actually won something, a couple of divisions, but Missouri kind of looked a little out of place. Texas doesn't look out of place to me.
Well, no, they, you know, Texas never thinks they're out of place. They never think that they're bad, even when they're terrible. You know, they're just wonderful. I just asked them. But, you know, on paper they look good, but I think they have questions of depth on both lines. You know, they have some question marks there. They're going to be relying on some younger players. And, you know, you never know how things are going to work out, because we go back, you know, now 13 years ago, A&M was coming off a 500-ish season. Nobody knew who the quarterback was. You know, everybody thought they were going to end up at the bottom of the SEC West, and they were the team who went into Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. Yep. And at the end of the year was probably one of the three top teams in the country. So you don't know how things are going to work out. But, you know, they certainly have ample confidence in what they have. And, you know, okay, great, more power to you. We'll see what happens.
Mark, I appreciate the insight, man. Thank you so much.
No problem, Chuck. Take care.
All right, Truist reporter for Texas A&M from AggieYell.com. So it was a window. It was an opportunity. It was, we're in the SEC right now, and it's not even, and you're not. It was, oh, we're in the SEC. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention to you because I'm busy being in the SEC. It immediately, like in just a stroke of a pen, Texas thought they had their own equalizer. We've got our own. You're joining the SEC? Great. We've got the Longhorn Network. It didn't turn out to be quite as lucrative as joining the Southeastern Conference. So Texas A&M, stroke of a pen, they undid 90-something years of unbalanced results, reputation, pride. Like, there was no balance. Texas A&M was a program that at best it had small pockets and windows, and it would go a while. Like, there was a season or two, I want to say in the early 70s, early mid 70s, might have been Texas Tech with Lester Hayes, for all I'm remembering. In fact, it was. So advanced to Jackie Sherrill in the 80s and the Wrecking Crew, and he got something done. I mean, Texas A&M, and it was actually Kevin Murray, who, yeah, that guy's dad. Kevin Murray was the quarterback when Texas A&M kind of turned their fortunes around. We thought it was in the old Southwest Conference, which was two conferences back, but it really never turned in anything at a seriously high level consistently. And they were good. Occasionally, they would look great. They had a team that went in the Cotton Bowl, and I want to say played Notre Dame, and that was probably a great team, but just it was never consistent. Then you join the SEC, and Texas, you know what Texas had been? Texas had eras where they were consistently great. They were national champions, plural, Heisman Trophy winners, plural. The biggest games against the biggest opponents and the biggest stakes, and that'd been Texas, 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 Texas for most of the time until the Southwest Conference went away. And then they kind of wandered the desert, but so were you. And then you went to the, you got the fast pass. You got to skip everything. You did nothing with it. And now this great equalizer, as soon as Texas joined, remember, this took Sankey calling Texas A&M and say, we need the vote to be unanimous. So you do what you think you need to, but we need this vote to be unanimous. And Texas A&M, so we announce a unanimous vote and they're joining the conference. Yay. We're so excited. They didn't want to. They realized they had no choice and it would just, they're getting in anyway. And if they got in against your objections, it would make it look even worse. So missed opportunity. Whiff, 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 whiff. I need to do that. What is it? 12 times? Whiff, 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 whiff. You were in the SEC. They were in that thing with the Longhorn Network. You had the SEC Network. They had that. They had a I've told you the story. A friend of mine who got offered a job there. Chuck, should I take it? It might not make it, I've heard. It's like, there is so little distribution that if you work there and get fired or it goes under, I was like, no one will. So few people are going to see you. It won't matter if you go there and fail. Like, that's why, that's how the, and we, that's the equal to the SEC Network? No, 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 no. It just didn't work out. It works out now. Because now you're Texas. And like, being in the SEC worked for Missouri, folks. Being in the SEC worked for South Carolina. It worked for Arkansas. It's really going to work for Texas. All right, we break in. Gosh, look at the time. Come back, wrap up next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
He's been through a lot of experiences. He's had some really high moments. He's had some challenging times that he's had to work through. And, you know, just the maturity of who he is, you know, the person, the character, the desire to be a part of something even bigger than himself. I think this has a chance to be just a special fit.
Florida State head coach, y'all all know that. They may have a cleanup practice. Plenty do. I think they practice once after their spring game. They go on the 20th, and then they'll have a practice, which is always a great idea, and y'all know why. But he's talking about his quarterback, DJU, and that's a fair description there. But DJ is like, he's way more experienced than he was at Oregon State, way, way more experienced than he was at Clemson, and he's physically able. There are skills there. He's not an elite guy, but when you have a physically skilled guy and at that position and experience, and so y'all know, like, it's kind of set up to kind of be good. So that's what Mike Norvell's hoping for. And he's like, could be a difference maker for us. Could be. He's got one more year to play and to prove it, and it has been very uneven, and part of it's because of him. So, when I say it's all set up for Florida State to have a lot of success, it's all set up for DJU to have some success as well. It's Florida State. Look at the collective. They got you, all right? They got other offensive weapons. They did that last year, past 2 years. So it's kind of set up for you. Now you have to do your part. At Clemson, you really didn't. And at Oregon State, there was probably an oversized part that was yours, probably, even for a quarterback. Florida State, yeah, you've got to do your part. So it's all on DJU now. And again, I think it's set up for a lot of success simply because when you add at the college level, there is still a little bit of, no, I can drag you. No, I'm a grown man. I'm 22 and you're 18. There is still some element of that. And when you add it to that position, it's just, it's kind of it's the great equalizer for a guy who's been kind of good and suddenly he's way experienced and older. It's just, it's an unreal advantage, and that's what they got. What's up, Heath?
So there's been a trend that's developed the last few years where you're seeing more effort with college sports facilities to try and turn it into something bigger. You're seeing, for example, Tennessee has made noises about developing what they're calling an entertainment district right there by their football stadium. Have you seen the details, Chuck, out of Oklahoma about what they're doing with their basketball facility? Have you gotten any look at this?
Oh, no, I have not.
This is wild stuff. This is the first time I can remember that we have gotten to basically pro-level negotiating, but by a college. Yesterday, the president of Oklahoma, this guy named Joe Haraz, told the student newspaper, the Oklahoma Daily, that if the Norman City Council does not approve the proposed $1 billion, I said that be $1 billion entertainment district that they would like to build that features a new arena for OU basketball as well as for the gymnastics squad, the university, alongside donors, will look to other cities to build an arena for the basketball and women's gymnastics team and build the entertainment district. Quote, I'm very hopeful and do everything I can to keep it here in Norman, but if this isn't approved by the city council, we're going to be looking at other cities, Oklahoma City, more surrounding areas. Chuck, they're threatening to leave. The University Athletics is threatening to leave town. Like, the whole reason shows like this exist, the whole reason people love college sports, is the idea that this crap will never, ever happen. Alabama will not say, if we don't get luxury boxes, we're moving to Montgomery. Oklahoma's now doing that. I don't know about this one.
No, like, I've told people before, like, Wake Forest used to actually be in Wake Forest, and then they left, I don't know why, in the 50s, so they said, we're going to Winston-Salem. Other than that, you're right. University of Minnesota did not get their new stadium because they threatened to move to L.A. The University of Minnesota got their new stadium because they decided, hey, let's have a stadium, and they raised money and did whatever. No, OU, this is not like a pro franchise. You can't say that we will pick up and become the Baltimore Ravens.
No, and it's just, it's wild to me because they want the new stadium that they're going to build for basketball, right? Right now they play in the Noble Center. They want the new stadium that they want to build for basketball to be about an 8,000-seat arena. They're doing, in a lot of ways, what Auburn did, where Auburn said, we're not going to try and have some big venue that holds a bunch of concerts or Disney on Ice or whatever, truck races. We're just going to try and have a really great arena for basketball. But the idea that they could put this in Oklahoma City, Norman is obviously close enough to Oklahoma City, and there's plenty of Sooner fans in Oklahoma City, but Oklahoma City already has an entertainment district. It's the Bricktown Entertainment District. It's where they've got their minor league baseball facility, where they hold the Women's College World Series, where the next arena is going to be. The idea that you're threatening to, in effect, move Sooner basketball away from campus and put it in Oklahoma City, I mean, that's just nuts.
You know what? It's tenured and it is a ridiculous statement on its face, but I will say, at least if it was, for instance, UCLA, look, if we don't need to get a new thing, I don't know. There are a lot of locales and communities around. In Oklahoma, the state, you pretty quickly run out of, you know, we'll look to other venues. Really, you're going to Enid? Where are you going, Lawton? No, you're not. You're going to be on campus, and you're going to take what you get.
And look, they'll probably get it built. I don't know. I won't pretend to know the politics of the Norman City Council, but it just that just blew my mind. The first time we've ever seen anything like that I've ever heard of. Also, one last nugget, Chuck. I don't know if you follow LeBron James's podcast he's got going right now, but sure, an interesting nugget. Said that after the 2011 finals loss, Eric Spoelstra, the coach of the Miami Heat, went looking for somebody to teach him how to do some things differently. Went to Chip Kelly in Oregon. Different sport, different dude, for ideas on how to turn the Heat into champions in 2012. I would not have guessed that.
Well, that certainly checks the box different. No doubt about it. Appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. Me and Heath and Dave and all of you and the guests. We'll all take 22 hours. We will recharge our batteries. And then this time tomorrow, be right back here talking college football on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.